The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony, a very, very good morning to you. How are you doing today?
Boker Tov, Howard. Pretty good, thank you. How are you guys doing today?
Yep, very, very good. It's reported that Israel and Hamas have reached a six-month ceasefire agreement. This must be good news.
Well, I think it is good news, but obviously everybody has their own opinion about whether it's appropriate for Israel to be negotiating with Hamas and whether we should even be entering into ceasefire arrangements at all, and why would we enter into a ceasefire arrangement under the current circumstances when, you know, what we see is a lot of aggravation and a lot of aggression from the side of Hamas. So, you know, the question has been asked as to what could this lead to for Israel. Why would it be good for Israel? Clearly, on the side of Hamas, the reason why it's good comes from a few areas. First of all, it has been agreed that Israel will once again extend the fishing zone to 15 miles off the Gaza coast. So that's very, very advantageous for Hamas. Also, Israel has agreed to promote this UN-initiated deal, which would allow for the transfer of medication and humanitarian aid, and also open up negotiations on electricity and crossings and health and other finances. So there are certainly some good things for Hamas. But I think the thing that we really need to think about in terms of the advantage for Hamas is it gives them a period of quiet within which they can rearm and re-sort out the things that were damaged during the previous exercises and during Israel's previous raids on Hamas. So this gives Hamas an opportunity really just to rebuild and to rearm. And of course, Israel is very much aware of that. So why would Israel wish to do this? In the first instance, it's the obvious. It's the fact that Hamas is apparently agreeing to end the border hostilities to preserve a security zone, which is 300 meters from the border fence, to cease night clashes, and of course, the flotillas and also the balloons. This is apparently what Hamas has agreed to stop doing in exchange for the 6 months period of quiet. But I think the one thing that seems to be very much below the radar is that I think that Israel perceives that we need to get through the six-month period of quiet period in order to get to the moment where we could potentially begin to negotiate the return of the two soldiers' bodies being held by Hamas in Gaza and, of course, the two Israeli citizens who are still unaccounted for. And I think for Israel, that is the much bigger prize. I mean, obviously, the quiet on the border is very important, and we should really respect the citizens of southern Israel who've had to endure a lot of aggression and, you know, a lot of disruption to their lives over the period of the Hamas operations. And so potentially this would give them a summer where they can live their lives like ordinary human beings without having to be running to bomb shelters in the middle of the night. Mm. And, of course, all the psychological damage that comes with it, not only for the adults, but also for the children and the next generation who grow up having had to endure this kind of very, very stressful existence that they have to endure in southern Israel with the operations that Hamas undertakes there. So let's not underestimate the importance of that. But I think really the big prize for us right now is that if we can get through the next six-month period, that potentially we're on to some discussions about how we're going to get the return of those bodies and those two Israeli citizens who, as I say, remain unaccounted for somewhere in Gaza.
Anthony, a couple of questions, observations on my side, and I just would appreciate your feedback on it. The one thing that I can't keep considering is that over the last couple of months, we've seen unprecedented pushback from civilians in Gaza against the rule of Hamas. There does most definitely seem to be, for the first time, pushback and resistance to Hamas type of rule. Could it be that Hamas has said, besides trying to take a period maybe to rearm, that being the more cynical, less cynical maybe, maybe to say, well, if we're going to keep a stronghold over this region and over the civilians of Gaza, we're going to have to allow a little bit of breathing room and, you know, economic growth, there's the fishing aspect, et cetera, in order to sort of release the pressure just a little bit on ourselves. What's your thoughts on that?
I think that there's certainly an element of that. I don't know how strong that push is. You know, we've seen up until now that citizens of Gaza have been quite loyal to the regime, to the anti-Israel feeling that the regime has promoted, and they seem to have really subscribed to that. And one does get the sense, although, you know, there is not much proof that we can really bring, but we do certainly get the sense that there is a little bit of a feeling within Gaza that if things were conducted differently at the level of the regime, that the life of the ordinary everyday citizen would be different. And so I think that there is, but I think that there's another element which you haven't mentioned, which is very important as well. And I think that that is Hamas's position with regard to renegade groups operating in Gaza. And to the extent that Hamas can be seen to be controlling Israel's response to Gaza, they have a stronger position vis-a-vis the other renegade groups than those who are just firing missiles and trying to get an Israeli reaction from that side. So in terms of how Hamas is presenting itself to the citizens of Gaza, this agreement effectively shows that they are in control, that they are the guys, are the go-to guys, and that the renegade groups are causing just more problems for the citizens of Gaza, and that they don't really have the power to control the situation in Gaza to the extent that Hamas does. So I think that this is also an attempt by Hamas to show their power to the everyday citizen.
Finally, my last observation is that for Israel, the fact that that Israel is heading into a summer period, which is always very, very dry, gives a further incentive for them to for Israel to try and make a at least a peace agreement during this time, considering the damage, the terrible damage that these balloons have, these fire balloons or incendiary balloons have created on the Israeli side of the border.
No doubt the summertime is a sensitive period, not only because of the dryness and the fires that we experienced last summer, which went on and on and on and put a huge strain not only on the firefighting service and the emergency services, but indeed created a lot of economic distress for people whose lands were burnt and who had to recover crops or buildings that were burnt down. Obviously, there is a lot of agricultural activity that goes on in that part of Israel. And a lot of economic damage was done. And of course, it caused a lot of consternation and stress for people living in that area. So the summertime certainly is a good time to reach an agreement and to potentially end these hostilities where possible. But I think we can also think about the summertime as being the holiday period. And soon enough, the schools will close. We're already towards the end of May, and by the middle of June, end of June, school children will be on their holidays. And it's quite common for Israeli school children to be free and roaming around and going into the fields and to visiting their friends and just to be out and about. And to the extent that there are hostilities coming from Gaza, of course, those school children will be endangered. And if they're not endangered, then they'll simply be caged in and closed in so that they can't do what normal children would do during the summer school holiday. So I think that there is also an element of giving some consideration to the holiday period that's coming up.
Absolutely. I just want to move on also to considering, following this topic of peace agreements. The Palestinian Authority has said that it will not attend the conference that's taking place in Bahrain on the 25th of June. It's expected that the economic part of the much-awaited U.S. Middle East plan is due to be revealed there. Why wouldn't the Palestinian Authority travel to Bahrain to attend this peace summit?
Well, it's ironic that they've already said that they're not going to be traveling to Bahrain when they haven't even really been invited yet. Apparently, invitations are not issued yet, but apparently if they are issued, the Palestinian Authority has already decided that it will not attend, although we are led to believe by a statement that was made from the Palestinian Authority that this will really be Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas's final decision. But it seems as if though And that decision might well have been made on his behalf if we believe the statement that's been made by the Palestinian Authority Prime Minister, Mohammed Shtaya, who was talking yesterday. Why would they not want to attend this conference? I think it's all about the relationship between the Palestinian Authority and the U.S. administration at the moment, because obviously this is a plan which is being cooked up by the U.S. administration in isolation, whereas before, when peace agreements were proposed and there were these meetings to try and discuss peace, it was not exclusively under the auspices of the United States. But generally speaking, there were other powers involved, be it the United Nations or the European Union or other countries who could be seen to potentially balance out some of the influences that the United States has on the process. This time, President Trump has decided he's going it alone with Jason Greenblatt and, of course, with Jared Kushner, who are leading the efforts to produce this proposed Middle East plan. And this is an exclusive arrangement coming out of the United States administration, which, of course, at the moment does not see eye to eye with the Palestinian Authority. So I think that this is an attempt by the Palestinian Authority to try somehow to assert their own independence and to send a message to the U.S. administration that they are not going to be influenced or bullied or coerced into anything that they don't see fit for themselves. And certainly the moment it comes from the U.S. administration, the Palestinian Authority is most likely to reject it off the bat, even without giving it proper consideration, because of all of that's happened up until now between the U.S. administration and the Palestinian Authority. So I think that this is just a statement right now about the relationship or lack of relationship between the Palestinians and the U.S. administration. Having said that, it's not clear exactly what the economic part of the plan would be. There was a statement that was made by Jason Greenblatt in response to this, where he was very disappointed that the Palestinians have already rejected the idea of attending Bahrain before they've been invited. And he made the following statement in writing, actually. He said, it's difficult to understand why the Palestinian Authority would reject a workshop designed to discuss a vision with the potential to radically transform lives and put people on a path toward a brighter future. So this was, you know, the way that he saw things. Of course, the Palestinian Authority decided that their people didn't necessarily need to, an improvement of living conditions while they are, as they put it, under occupation, which, of course, you know, is a very emotive term. And we could definitely discuss the accuracy of whether that is, in fact, the situation or not. But clearly the U.S. administration disappointed because I think, interestingly, they're taking the approach that says political things are clearly important, but without an economic basis, there can be no peace arrangement. And I find that a slightly different approach to the ones that we've seen up until now, and potentially quite an interesting one.
I tend to agree. I'm greatly looking forward to seeing what this plan is all about. It'll be fantastic to be able to interrogate it. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. It's about to go 8 o'clock.